and welcome to episode 180 of Speak Beastie for June 25th, 2023. I'm Anne.
I'm Amy.
And I'm Shannon.
And we're here, and we're still going, and it's June.
Yay!
We already said Happy Pride Month last episode, right?
I think, probably.
I mean, I'm always wishing a Happy Pride Month.
If not, Happy Pride Month.
Yeah, happy continuing Pride Month.
So I'm sick, and I think that's homophobic.
It is!
It's extremely unfair.
That's the end of the sentence, I guess.
I told my husband the other day that if he didn't laugh at one of my bad puns, it was actually a hate crime because it's Pride Month. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm right there with you.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of people who we don't hate, this episode is sponsored by Speak Beastie Patreon supporter Sam S. Sam has been there since the beginning. Thank you for your support.
Thank you,
Thank
Sam.
Thank you, Sam. And really tried on that transition.
You know, I'm doing my... We're all just doing our best out here. And if you disagree, that's a hate crime because it's Pride Month.
Yeah, and you know what? It was not your worst transition, so...
You know, I've done way worse.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we've actually got some news this episode. Yeah. Yay!
And now a message from our sponsors.
Hey you, yes you, the magical cats and dolls waving your wands like bean shooters in a caper. Looking to be on the up and up about Newt Scamander, famous zoologist and world traveler? No need for gossip at the juice joint, just tune your ears to Speak Beastie. And now for as little as one dragon dollar a month, you can make Speak Beastie the measles meow. Support the show at patreon.com and suddenly you're the big cheese, the real McCoy, with exclusive access to swell sneak peeks, bloopers, and behind-the-scenes features. But wait, there's more. Sponsors can also beat their gums at the joint with access to the Speak Beastie Common Room on Facebook. Now you're really on the clean sweep, flyboy. Get a wiggle on to patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more about becoming a sponsor today. It's the Billy Wiggs knees and how.
First up, Fantastic Beasts, the Wonder of Nature exhibit is open in Melbourne right now. So it's at the Melbourne Museum in Australia. And our friend Lucy from MuggleNet went out there to check it out, and she put up an event report. So if you're curious and want to see some pics, you can check that out. It will be in Melbourne until October 8th. I'm still sad I haven't made it to this exhibit.
I'm just going to pretend that it's in Melbourne, Florida, which is only an hour away from me, and I'm going to go over there and see what happens.
Just drive around and see if you spot it.
Yeah.
And Shannon is still driving.
Just, if they have a museum over there, I'll go up and be like, hey, where's the Fantastic Beasts?
So what you should do is you should bring your video that you're watching and just sit on the front stairs and watch it.
Mm-hmm.
There we go. Perfect. We just like being there.
Just like.
Yeah.
We also have a little bit of theme park news. There's some leaked video from Epic Universe. It was posted on InsideTheMagic.net, and it was originally posted on Twitter, but Inside the Magic shared this tweet. The Twitter user claims that this short video clip is a look at the construction of the Ministry of Magic at Universal's Epic Universe. The video really doesn't show very much, and it's not confirmed to actually be from the park, but if it is, it's a very, very large building.
I mean, it's definitely from a construction site.
Yes. We can confirm that much.
Let me see. So this is like... I mean, it is a huge building. The first time I watched this, I was like, it doesn't look that big. And then I saw a person. I was like, oh my gosh.
So, huge. So the speculation is that this is where the ride is going to be. Because it's such a large space, it could obviously hold quite the ride contraption inside there.
Yeah, there's like a bunch of scaffolding, and the person taking the video is on a lift.
Mm-hmm.
So it's looking down.
I couldn't tell if like the thing that you see in the distance is the wall, or if that's like another building that's supposed to be next to it. Almost looks like a skyscraper type thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I guess to the side, it kind of almost looks like a garage door. Like that would be a maintenance door and that this is inside, but maybe not because there's a gap there.
Yeah, I don't know. It's very hard to tell.
It's definitely from like exterior construction photos.
Yes.
They are very close together buildings.
Yeah.
I mean, it's supposed to look like, you know, an alley, so.
Right. One more piece of news is that as of the day of recording, the studio tour in Tokyo is having its grand opening.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So, some Matt
I'll
Lewis...
I'll just pretend that's in Melbourne, Florida, too.
That is also in Melbourne, Florida. So, Matt Lewis, Tom Felton, and Ivana Lynch all went to the opening today. And
that's nice.
If anyone does happen to be in Japan and does happen to go, please tell us all about it. I'm very, very jealous of you.
I know someone in Japan, but he wouldn't go to that.
Why not?
I don't think he's a Harry Potter fan.
Oh, well,
he's a Disney reporter.
I guess we can forgive him then.
I can't. I refuse.
So lots of good, like, attractions news this week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there is no Owl Post, so if you have any thoughts about any of this, please write in speakbeastie@gmail.com. We would love to hear your theories on whether the video is the Ministry of Magic or what you think Plus Cachet is going to look like or your dream itinerary to Japan as long as it includes the studio tour.
I'm going to assume every time we don't get Owl Post that means everyone just agrees with everything we've said.
Yes, it is. If you disagree with that statement, you know what to do.
Yeah.
And if you agree, still write in, please.
Yeah.
We would love to hear from you. That does lead us into the main discussion. So we are at scene 95, and we're just doing the one, we're actually only doing half of one scene.
For the first time, we're splitting a scene.
Because
I gotta say here, because you have it written as scene 95, part one, through the killing, bowing to Santos. I do keep reading bowing as bowling.
Yes, and then they all went 10-pin bowling. It was a very
happy
affair.
I mean, I'm really
affair.
Into that. I need some fan art. Please,
I mean, we know that Dumbledore is a fan of bowling, so this could make sense. They're going to the bowling alley.
I would love that, because you know that Lou would just love his kicky bowling shoes. And Queenie would spend the whole time going, oh, Jacob, you're so strong. It'd be so great.
Perfect date night.
Newt would be really bad at bowling.
Credence would try to pick up the ball and be unable to, and then have feelings about it.
Theseus would just get frustrated and just magic the ball down the alley.
Yeah. Oh, he'd
be like,
cheat.
Why are we doing this the hard way? This is so stupid.
Lally gets an effortless 300. Like, she's not even looking. She's just got her back towards the alley and she's just going.
She's reading a book at the same time.
Lally and Theseus are both cheating, but the difference is Lally doesn't get caught cheating. She's better at cheating.
And Aberforth spends the whole time at the food counter getting plastic cheese on top of his fries.
Yep.
And then I think Tina would just be good at bowling.
Yeah, no, I think she and Queenie probably are, like, legit. I think they probably went to, like, a bowling league when they were kids.
For sure. They're just playing the game. All right, anyway.
Anyway, so speaking of
you
cardio.
Know where we're not bowling on the stairs, am I right?
Newt is hustling up those stairs after Fisher. Like, he is straight up running, and that is a lot of stairs. And
I cannot imagine.
Fisher's just going. She's just going up them stairs, looking around, carrying the case, just having a nice time.
Yeah.
In her heels, she's not bothered.
No, she has no bothers left to give.
No. So when I was rewatching this, we keep seeing in the background those two guys who are guarding the temple door. Why are they guarding the door that no one is trying to get through? They're not, like, guarding the ceremony or the candidates or anything. They're like, nope, we're going to stand here at this temple door that no one seems to actually care about getting through, but we're going to guard it.
That's a good...
Like, what's in there?
I don't know, something cool. We should probably break it and find out. So as we, as Newt gets up the stairs and runs, we get a quick tour around the world, according to the screenplay, that is... And it says that, hang on, I've got the Kindle open, here we go. As dignitaries and magical ministries in Europe and elsewhere watch the ceremony. And I don't know, it's been a minute since the last time I watched this scene. And so I hear a quick tour around the world and I'm thinking, okay, we probably hit a couple of different countries. No, we hit the UK, Germany, and possibly China. There's mountains, there's birds, and there's red columns with gold circular decorations on them.
I find it odd that we don't see Brazil.
I feel like we see Brazil later, don't we? Like in the same sequence where we see Tina?
I don't recall seeing it.
Maybe I'm misremembering. I don't know.
I don't know.
Oh, regardless, I would like to see that because I want to know way more about all of these other ministries and magical societies.
Same.
And... they're already adding Wizarding France to Epic Universe. I don't see why they just can't add a couple others. Surely Universal has unlimited money and can do this for me.
An unlimited space.
Yes.
Yeah.
Jinx.
They get the Keelan out and set it down. The Keelan starts kind of ambling towards Grindelwald, and Lou and Santos look at each other like, what is this? What's happening here?
I like that they look at each other, that they are, like, in the know with each other, and not, you know, I like it when candidates, like, get along.
Yeah.
It's just fun. So I like them being like, oh, you know, we disagree on a lot of things, but...
I could almost see them being like, okay, like, we need to unite the two of us, and just one of us has to win against this other guy.
Yeah. Newt continues to run up the stairs. He finally catches up with Fisher. And when he does, she just kind of stands there and smiles at him, just looking very, very Vin de Rosier, very calm amongst the chaos. And she just hands him the case and he takes it. And then they both look down and the case starts disintegrating.
It's so funny to me because it's like, did she, like, what is... this spell, I guess, is basically the question. And, like, that she put it on it while she was going up the stairs, I guess. Just that, like, 30 seconds ago, she was like, I need this case. And now she's like, take it.
Well, and, like, if you think about it, like, presumably people know that Newt keeps a whole menagerie in his case. So Fisher really just... as far as she knows, murdered a whole bunch of animals.
If she was just going to destroy the case anyway and not take it from him, wouldn't it have just been so much easier to shoot a spell at it way back at the bottom of the stairs and destroy it?
Yeah. Or, like, you know, knock him out and then just destroy it.
She's definitely rubbing this one in.
Mm-hmm.
I almost thought that this was Dumbledore's failsafe. That if the case was held by another pair of hands for too long or something, it would start to disintegrate. But this is, then I thought, it's not nearly chaotic enough to have been orchestrated by Albus Dumbledore.
No, it's got to be more flashy.
Yeah, and also Fisher does not seem surprised. And presumably if she had not set it up to be destroyed, she would be a little bit more surprised. But I also wondered the same thing, like, what the heck did she do to this case?
Yeah. When you guys were watching it, were you at all worried that this was the real case?
A little.
Like, once she disintegrated it, it was kind of like, okay, well, that can't be the real case because they wouldn't do that, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's where I was at. It was like, okay, well. Or I was like, that's not really disintegrating.
Yeah.
You know? It's gonna appear again somewhere. And then, yeah, it was all fine.
Yeah, of course it's all fine.
But, man, it would suck to be Newt in this moment. He was convinced that was his case.
Yeah, no, he thought that he just saw his whole case just disintegrate into the Bhutanese air.
That's what happens when you don't trust Dumbledore.
The dust drifts up. The banners reveal Grindelwald and the Keelan. The Keelan steps in front of Grindelwald and bows.
And bowls.
And it bowls. Yeah. And is like, strike this guy!
Strike him with a spell! No! Guys, you're doing the wrong thing!
The wizarding world decides, screw democracy, let's let our literal baby decide. Like, I'm never not gonna be mad about this. This is so dumb.
Vogel says, the Keelan has seen goodness, strength, qualities essential to lead and to guide us. Who do you see? And so everyone throws their wands up and throws out colored smoke, and the screenplay says, the three colors of Lou, Santos, and Grindelwald stream into the sky and then turn to one, Grindelwald's green. And that's not exactly what happens in the movie. What happens in the movie is that there's still red and yellow, but it's a majority green.
Well, the green also, like, chases down the red and yellow and almost, like, bullies them out of the air. Like, the fireworks, like, shoot it out of the air, and then it becomes the green Grindelwald logo.
Huh.
Yeah, it's interesting to watch it. Like, you see it, like, off subtle to the side of the screen when that's playing out. Hmm.
It is, like, so is, are they also rigging it that way? With the probably lights? I don't know.
Probably.
The whole thing's rigged. Something else I noticed when I was rewatching, obviously I noticed this before because Bunty is one of those people in the green robes, but I didn't really think about it or, like, register that there's also the red and yellow-robed people.
Oh!
Who are they? Because they're not just, like, supporters. These are very official-looking uniforms.
Yeah, if you further on in the screenplay, it's when Bunty comes out, it describes her as a green-robed dignitary.
Oh.
So I guess maybe, like, they're Bhutanese authorities? But then how does Bunty slip in? They're like, no problem, guys. I'm just wearing the same thing as you anyway.
Well, they're in the colored robes of each of the candidates' colors. Mm. So that's why I was trying to figure out, like, are they attendants to the different candidates? Are they, like, from their teams? I don't know.
Oh, maybe. Vogel says, Gellert Grindelwald is the new leader of the magical world by acclamation. And I don't think he can say it's the leader because of acclamation, because I don't think he counted.
Yeah,
what about the people who couldn't get to Bhutan? I didn't vote for him.
I know. I mean, we've said it before, but this whole system doesn't make sense. Or maybe it does make sense, it's just not explained to us. But it's very annoying.
Yeah, you can't have a whole movie around an election and then be like, lol, the election doesn't count, bye. Like,
yeah, and now Grindelwald's in charge, or whatever. Sounds fake, but okay.
Yeah.
A little bit sus, if you ask me.
This is all a little bit sus.
I think something's fishy about this Grindelwald character.
Mm-hmm.
Two acolytes shove Newt up the stairs. Grindelwald nods to Rosier. She brings forth Queenie and Jacob.
Another thing about this.
Yeah.
Before we go into what you have down, is the, like, okay, now he's just in charge. There's not a, like, transition period. There's not a, like, you know.
Right. Like, there's no changing of the guard.
Ceremony.
Yeah, there's not, like, a, like, Vogel doesn't have, like, is Vogel expected to have all of his affairs wrapped up by election day?
We didn't vote in November and then wait till January, like, to make sure everything is cool. It was just like, all right, now he's in charge. Take it away, man.
Well, I guess that's why the wizarding world is so chaotic.
No, yeah, kidding. I guess so. So they're really just changing hands like that.
And at this point, now that he is in charge of the wizarding world, Grindelwald goes really full mask off really fast.
Yeah. All the way into it.
Just, this is weakening the bloodline, and muggles are vermin, and we're at war with the muggles. Like, straight into it. Not even like a, hey guys, thanks for voting for me. Just no, right into pure bloodlines. I just knocked out my headphones. I'm gesturing so much about this.
He's like so confident in that what he believes is right and that everyone else believes the same as him that he's just like not even trying to hide it.
Yeah.
Yes.
It is crazy because it is like, hey, what if something happened right now that made you have to go back on all this?
Mm. Right? Like, what if you were like, oh, actually, I think muggles are great. I know that's not what you meant, but I was just like, what if there was like a really cute muggle kid or something that was like, no, Mr. Grindelwald! And he was like, oh, I'm rethinking everything.
Or if it was just like, other than, you know, what happens if it was just suddenly he's giving this whole speech and the crowd is like, wait a second, no, I just stuck to booing him. We take it back.
So Grindelwald has, there's this long moment where Grindelwald is just pointing his wand at Jacob and Jacob is waiting and
just chilling.
Like, Dan Fogler is, I've never seen someone eat the scenery so subtly before. Because, like, he is giving this 110%, but it is all very subtle.
He's a good actor, man.
He's fantastic. And Jacob turns to face him. Grindelwald hits him with a spell that knocks him down the stairs. And then hits him with Crucio.
He could have just knocked him all the way down the stairs.
There are so many that would have hurt him just as much. Mm-hmm. The...
He could have just made him walk up the stairs.
Oh, God. That would kill him for sure. And I guess everyone is just cool with an elected official using an unforgivable curse?
Apparently. They're all just standing there, like, whatever.
Well, I wonder, this is where we get into, like, it's not totally clear where, like, the differences are in the different Wizarding World laws. So, like, is it considered an unforgivable curse in all wizarding governments? It's still crazy. But, like, is it, you know, illegal in Bhutan? I don't know.
Yeah, I was about to reference the Geneva Convention, but I don't know if the Geneva Convention had been written at this point, and somewhere my husband just got really upset with me and doesn't know why. Hang on, I gotta Google this.
Probably not, because they're after the Second World War, right?
That's what I'm thinking, but again, that's why also, Chris is very upset with me right
wizards now. Wizards definitely don't care.
I know, but yes, okay, the Geneva Convention were in 1949, so they were not in effect at this point. However, I still feel like torture's not cute, regardless of where you are.
Honestly, I'm surprised. I mean, I'm not surprised because from, like, a filmmaking standpoint, this would be bad. But, like, he could have just killed him.
I was waiting for him to. Like, I was waiting for him to just AK him and be done with it.
Yeah. I mean, also, he's a muggle, too. So why is he even making this big show? It's not really like a muggle can really pose that much of a threat to him, and if they do, then doesn't that paint him as super weak?
Yeah, it really is that same thing that, like, our enemies are super strong and super involved in all these conspiracies, but also our enemies are really weak and really stupid, so we can destroy them easily.
Yeah.
Like, they're both at the same time.
Yeah. I guess maybe if he had just killed Jacob, he knew that just, like, I don't know, Newt would kill him immediately.
Queenie would kill him. Like, he knows that he kills Jacob. Queenie, there is nothing to stop her from just going directly into his head and exploding it.
Yeah. Like, I think he wouldn't actually take Queenie and Newt as, like, real threats, but I think he's probably like, I just want to torture this guy for funsies and not worry about them freaking out more. Because that's not the show I'm putting on here.
People are cheering for this. Lally, Theseus, and Comet can be seen moving through the crowd looking shocked. And at least in the movie, Lally looks shocked. Theseus looks annoyed. And you can't see Comet's face because for most of the scene, his face is blocked by an extra's arm.
Yeah, that sounds right. They've done such a disservice to my man.
They really did. They built him up so much and then they were just like, 15 minutes. Anyway, bye.
Yeah. No dialogue. He doesn't speak for the rest of the movie.
Jacob is under the Cruciatus curse for 26 seconds. Until Santos lifts it. I timed it because I was like, okay, we talk about how Santos, like, apparently likes muggles and, like, she's so cool for lifting it. But I remember it taking her a little bit. Like, this goes on.
Like, I'm glad she lifts it, but...
Yeah. She should have just started fighting Grindelwald right away.
Yeah!
That would have been awesome if it was just a fight, like a three-way fight between Santos, Lou, and Grindelwald.
Oh my god.
And Dumbledore's like, I'll just go, I guess.
I mean, it's cool that she's like the only one, you know, who stands up to him in that moment. Good on her, but it's just, yeah.
It must be hard to lift someone else's Cruciatus.
That's true. Mm.
I mean, obviously, like, Newt and Queenie don't do it.
Yeah, I wonder if you have to, like, focus really hard first, kind of like...
Yeah.
Because you have to focus to mean it, and you have to, like, really mean it to cast it.
You know who's a really powerful wizard and who's there and who doesn't do it? Dumbledore. Mm-hmm. He's like, this is all going according to plan.
Maybe he would like, well, okay, I'll let it go to 45 seconds just to, like, make sure that everything's good. Let's make sure that,
he's
like,
still
really
walking up
it.
The stairs.
Yeah, Aberforth and I are still getting our cardio in.
Yeah. Speaking of cardio,
yeah,
the
so,
dying boy.
So Grindelwald is, like, looking up at the sky, just loving on the fact that everyone's loving on Grindelwald. And he
this
sees
is a good moment.
The phoenix overhead. A piece of ash floats down and lands on his cheek. He wipes it off. And then, as Shannon mentioned, the dying boy has made it all the way up the stairs.
Hey, B, I bet you thought you'd see the last of me.
Exercising that poor, weak heart of his. And goes to Grindelwald, cups his face, and just smears the ash down his cheek like he is a
iconic
girly at the club who just got dumped by her boyfriend and the eyeliner is just running down.
I love this parallel. I love this callback to Graves doing that with Prudence. It feels like a consistency that we don't usually get with these films.
Yes.
To, like, remember that moment from the first movie and go back to it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it's just so good. It's just so, like, he didn't need to do that. But he wanted to.
Now that we know that he's a Dumbledore, a lot of things make sense, like how extra he is.
Oh, 100%.
That's so true.
What I really love is all of this part right here shows Grindelwald's ego and that he totally thought that he had credence. Like, he thought that he had him on his side, he was loyal, blah, blah.
Yeah, he probably thought he was dead by now.
Yeah. Probably. He probably hoped he was dead by now.
Yeah, but he probably never thought that credence would be the one to, like, totally blow his entire plan and be like, hey guys, that chillin's dead.
It really struck me while reading, like, how long it takes Grindelwald to, like, react in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
In, like, where Credence starts talking and then Newt starts talking and Grindelwald doesn't say anything for a moment. And he's not just like, oh, let me crucio these guys. Like, he's definitely recovering from some shock here.
Oh, yeah. He probably figured he had Credence so well wrapped around his fingers. He's like, okay, how do I spin this?
Mm-hmm.
And I think he also thinks that he has enough other people just in this crowd that they're going to do something. But it's kind of like, from this point forward, no one else really acts for him.
Right.
Yeah. Vogel does a little bit, but it's Vogel.
He tries, but he goofs it
and
up.
And Vogel's really trying to save himself.
Yeah.
It's not about how much he wants Grindelwald to be in charge. It's how much he doesn't want his reputation ruined. Because he let this happen.
Yes.
But that's skipping ahead a bit.
Well, okay, so Credence and Newt do try to convince everyone that the baby Jilin is a zombie Jilin. And There's a moment where Credence, like, collapses, and Aberforth kind of, like, moves forward, and Dumbledore holds him back because he's like, no, this is iconic right now.
No, we gotta get it to 45 seconds.
We need to make sure that this moment is over before you have your own moment. I'm not gonna have you upstage me.
Yeah. No, this can't be the reunion moment. It's just not good cinematically.
Too soon.
I actually think it would have been great if Aberforth ran to Credence in this moment, cinematically.
Oh yeah, no, it would have been amazing, but it would have been distracting, both cinematically, plot-wise, and for Grindelwald and Dumbledore.
Yeah. There's too much going on in this movie.
It's not happening.
It does a better job handling it all than the last movie, but...
Grindelwald says that Newt and Credence are just using words designed to deceive, to make you doubt what you've seen with your own eyes. Points out that Newt has no proof of the second Keelan or the Mama Keelan. And Newt has this moment, like, the camera lingers on him for a long moment where he's just kind of like, well, shit. You can tell he's just like, I got nothing.
Newt's like, this is not what I do. I just carry a suitcase. I don't know. Like, oops, I've just looked around and realized I'm surrounded by people, not beasts. I'm gonna go.
Literally my least favorite thing. Luckily then, a green-robed dignitary steps forward, brings out a case from under their robes, and hands it to Newt.
And he's like, what?
Yeah, he's really just like,
And we're all like, Tina! And it's not Tina, but it's Bunty.
I was really so expecting to be cool. Tina. I was ready.
Oh, it would have been so ready. Good.
Oh, would have been so good.
Well, and obviously up until this point, they've shown all the other, you know, they've shown people around the world, but they purposefully didn't show Tina.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bunty saves the day, reminds Newt that no one can know everything. And then she's like, oh god, people. Okay, bye. I'm gonna go now. And she goes.
Yeah. It's pretty good.
The other baby Keelan comes out. It is adorable.
Oh my gosh.
It does little baby stuff. It kind of wanders around. We see Tina, who is not in the robe. She's just she's in America watching.
I noticed that they didn't do a scene break to cut to Tina in the script. They will do a scene break for literally any reason, but not to cut to a character in a different country.
Well, they also didn't scene break earlier when we went to the UK and Germany and China.
Yeah, they were just like, other places.
All happening in scene 95.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, this is a really long scene.
It is. It's 17 pages in the Kindle edition, so I'm presuming it's similar in the print edition.
And then we get, like, the most heartbreaking moment.
Yes, the baby Keelan looks around, she sees her sister, and she starts crying for her, like, to get her attention. And so, I have a story. I promise it's semi-related. So we used to dog sit these two dogs, Lucy and Emma, right? They were in the same litter, and they literally had never been apart their entire lives.
Oh.
So, we're dog sitting Lucy and Emma, and Chris had to take Emma to the vet because her mama thought she had gotten into some rat poison and wanted to make sure that she was okay. Mm-hmm. And so Lucy's locked up in the little bedroom where they stayed during the day. Chris comes home with Emma. He says that as Lucy hears him coming in and hears Emma's claws and tile, Lucy just, like, is at the door, like, pressing under the door looking to see it for Emma. And that just the same thing with the baby Keelan seeing her sister and not understanding why she's not responding.
Yeah. We had one, my family dogs most of my childhood were Sugar and Molly, and they didn't like each other that much, but at the ends of their lives, Molly was 16 and Sugar was about 10, and Sugar got cancer.
Oh.
So for the last few weeks of her life, we had to kind of keep her in the kitchen because she was bleeding out of her nose. So we didn't want to get it on the carpet, but she and Molly would, like, sleep side by side on either side of the gate into the kitchen.
So, it was like, oh, they do like each other.
Okay, Amy, what's your cute story about animals liking each other?
Oh.
I think we're tangenting.
We are tangenting, anyway.
A little bit. That can be our bonus content. We'll just share cute animal stories, along with the video that Shannon sent us of foxes playing, and that can be on Patreon.
Newt says, she can't hear you, little one. Not here, but perhaps somewhere she's listening.
Gets a little bit too Christian in that moment for me.
Freaks out, snatches up the bewitched Chulin, and then it basically, the spell stops animating it.
Yeah.
And I wonder, like, was it a time limit thing? If that's the case, like, was Grindelwald's plan to have the Chulin off stage by the time the spell ended? Or was it because Vogel picked it up and kind of shook it around? Or
I feel like if it was a time limit thing, then Grindelwald would have removed it immediately.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's probably from Vogel, like, picking it up. Or Dumbledore did something.
I was wondering if the spell is so delicate that it being picked up more than once can damage or terminate the spell. Like, did Grindelwald tell people? Like, hey, be very mindful about how often you pick this up.
Maybe he didn't expect the ceremony to go so long. He thought that it would just bow to him and that would be that. So now it's wearing off because it took longer.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to say. Like, I wish we got some explanation. The British witch who last showed up in Berlin on the same balcony as Vogel, who we still don't know nothing about.
No, we can know the names of every single person who works for Grindelwald, but this lady doesn't matter.
No, we hate her.
We only just learned Fisher's name in the last scene, so.
And I think I was rewatching this, but my HBO Max cut out, so I didn't get to finish watching the scene. But I think if it's the person I think it is, she and Rosier are wearing almost the exact same shade of blue. And nothing comes of it. Like, there's no, it's just very strange that they chose that same color for these two female characters instead of different. I don't know. It was just that clocked me. I was like, huh. Like, was this some kind of discarded plot where maybe Rosier was going to pose as her or something? I don't know.
So I just, like, Googled Fantastic Beasts, Secrets of Dumbledore, British Witch.
Yeah.
Apparently her name is Ida Webb.
Ida Webb, okay.
According to something.
Why is that not in the screenplay? That's so strange. We have all these other characters that their names make it into the screenplay, even if they haven't been said on screen.
Yeah, that's what she's listed as on IMDb.
Yeah, but I don't know where this name actually came from.
Strange.
Ida Webb. Oh, no, it is. That is not the actress I thought it was. Again, I didn't say it, so. So the actress who, the Ida Webb, is wearing a green coat. Never mind. There is another actress who's wearing a coat the same color as Rosier's. And it's really weird that they made that choice. Anyway. The Chulin goes towards Dumbledore. And Dumbledore has possibly one of the funniest moments in the entire movie. Where he goes, no, please, no.
I don't like this. I don't like that it bows to Dumbledore.
Well, neither does he, so you're in good company.
Yeah, it's true. He agrees with me, so.
Dumbledore says he is honored, but just as two of you were born that night, there is another here, equally worthy, I'm certain of it. And the Keelan's just like, all right, she'll do.
I wonder if when Dumbledore is saying this, he's thinking of Santos, or if he's just like, I know that there are better people here.
Can you imagine if, like, the Chulin was just like, okay, and just wandered off and, like, picked out some rando in the crowd? Would Vogel be like, president?
I always wanted it to bow to Jacob, but...
Oh my god, please.
I think it would have been better if it had bowed to Jacob in this moment, and Jacob was like, hey, listen, kid, I literally cannot. So... or if it had bowed to Newt, I feel like that would have made sense.
Mm-hmm. It would have made sense cinematically because it's a great moment, but I feel like maybe WB knew that that the fans would tear that moment apart.
Yeah.
No.
I could never see New as leading the Wizarding World.
No.
Like, no way.
Well, I think he still would have, he would have said no too, but.
As we wrap up, Santos is happy in her position as winner slash runner up. She's number two. She's number two. And we will continue our discussion of scene 95 next episode.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a long one.
Mm-hmm. Well, shall we open the newt case?
Let's do it.
Yes, let's do it and hope that it doesn't disintegrate in Henrietta Fisher's hands.
Oh yeah, let's hope it's the right one.
Oh no, it's the wrong one.
It's just pastries.
Oh god, there's just pastries everywhere.
Okay. So in the newt case today, we have the catawampus. So first, to just talk about the etymology of the word catawampus. It's been around for at least a couple centuries. The first recorded use of the word, according to this blog post on wordorigins.org, is in 1830 in the Carolina Sentinel, in which it just kind of means like obliquely, catawampusly, specifically, not catawampusly. Yeah, catawampusly. So a lot of these kind of more 1800s, worse 1800s uses of the word is like oblique, diagonal, completely is also a slightly different word. So where it came from is not totally clear, the word. It might be related to catty corner, which is a word that means diagonal, or catamount, which means cat of the mountain.
Huh.
And of course, there's the fact that cat is obviously in there. And of course, we know wampus is a creature from folklore, American folklore. Because it's a house at Ilvermorny. So it is also, the word has also come to mean like a fierce wild animal. And I'm not actually really sure when it started to mean that, when it was first used for that. But if you search catawampus and you look at images, you're only going to see one guy. And that's the catawampus at Knott's Berry Farm.
I love this so much.
The catawampus at Knott's Berry Farm is a creature that we don't know when exactly it came to be, but sometime in the late 1930s. So Knott's Berry Farm, for people unfamiliar, is a theme park in California, not far from Disneyland, and it started 100 years ago with an actual farm, an actual berry farm, and then just kind of slowly became a theme park run by the Knott's family. So among these attractions, quote unquote, these days we usually think of attractions more as rides, but like the literal meaning and something that attracts people, was the catawampus that Walter Knott invented sometime in the late 1930s and put on his farm. And this is all information available on the Knott's Berry Farm blog. They have a whole post about the catawampus. So an old, like, newspaper clipping says, "And would you look at this? Just around the corner from Sad Eye Joe, past Goldie's Joint. If that don't beat it all, that's just about the orneriest critter you could ever catch under a woodpile. It's a good thing they put a fence around him. Or is it a she? It says here, when this catawampus is gone, the species will be extinct. Whatever that means."
Wow.
So, the catawampus at Knott's Berry Farm is in reality made of wood. It has changed over the years. The kind of original pictures of it, it just looks like some really random sticks that people found. But the kind of iconic image that you see today, it's got a very cylindrical head with two curved horns coming out of the side and then a very skinny body. But it's also just still made of rough wood. So the Catawampus, when Ghost Town opened in the 40s, which is most of Knott's Berry Farm, really, like almost half the park, the Catawampus was moved into Ghost Town, which is like a Western-themed town. At that time, his sign read, "Of the vast herds of Catawampus, which centuries ago roamed the Western Plains, this is the only one left. According to Professor Ananias, when this Catawampus is gone, the species will be extinct." So, obviously the lore was that, like, this was the last Catawampus in existence, which is interesting, I don't know, because now the sign just says Catawampus species extinct.
Oh.
Oh.
But their implication is that the wooden animal died?
Well, so here's the other weird thing. I'll go back a little bit. So in 1964, wood artist Forrest Morrow came in and he worked on the Catawampus. So I think he kind of gave it more of its iconic look. And Catawampus has moved around the park a little bit. If you stand by and listen, you will hear it moo every once in a while. And then the weird thing is that at some point, a kittywampus did appear.
A kittywampus?
So there are two catawampuses, two catawampi. There's an adult and a baby. And they sit under the windmill at the livery barn. So species extinct except asexual reproduction?
Huh.
Well, maybe they mean it's extinct in the wild, because I know sometimes at zoos you'll see signs that say that they're extinct in the
wild. That's true.
Hmm.
So, that's the Catawampus. Don't know much about it. I mean, there's nothing else to know about it, but, you know, the lore is that it's this species that once existed in the Western Plains. And presumably Walter Knott just heard the word Catawampus and was like, that sounds like a weird creature, and so decided to name his little weird creature that. And I think it's really cool that it's almost 100 years old. It's changed over the years. I doubt any of the original, I guess, sculpture exists, but another sign early on said, warning, this critter ain't downright vicious, but it ain't safe to get in the corral with him. So yeah, I visited Knott's Berry Farm and I fell in love with the Catawampus and I was like, I need to tell everyone about this.
He's a cute little guy.
He is a cute little guy.
He's also like way smaller than I thought he would be, because I had seen a picture and I thought this was like a big sculpture.
Hmm.
But it is like pretty, it's like a foot tall.
Oh wow.
Behind this fence. And then the Kittywampus is even smaller. Hmm. And it's next to the livery barn, which is where you can meet real horses. Oh, also at night, its eyes glow.
Oh, that's terrifying.
So there's that.
Just too. Like Mothman! What is with these statues and glowing eyes?
Yeah, I love it. So, that's the Catawampus. It can go back into the case now with its kitty.
That's amazing.
We're gonna keep it safe.
Bye, like Catawampus. So that wraps things up for this episode. Our podcast question this week is, why do you think the Chilean's spell failed? We'd love to hear from you, so drop us an owl on any of our social media outlets or email us at speakbeastie@gmail.com. You can also leave us a review on Apple Podcasts.
And you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at speakbeastie, on Facebook at facebook.com/speakbeastie, on Tumblr at speakbeastiepodcast.tumblr.com, and you can support the show on Patreon at patreon.com/speakbeastie. We have stickers. You get stickers.
And you had access to the common room and all sorts of other cool stuff.
Give us money and you get stickers.
Anne has been doing all sorts of fun stuff for Patreon, too.
Yes, you will get exclusive access to my trip to the Mothman Museum, where there are a lot of pictures of me and Mothman's abs, and it's a little unsettling.
Is that your new husband?
I mean, he is indeed my third husband. Okay. Because now I have, wait, no, fourth? Oh, I guess Chris counts. So I've got Chris, I've got Theseus, I've got Haverford, and I've got Mothman. And then
I have been to my wife. You no longer count, apparently.
He counts! No, I wish that,
there had been more Catawampus content. And I could have a Catawampus bonus content, but it's really just some sticks that I love. So.
Well, you need to contact Knots and tell them to get on the Catawampus Museum, and also get a giant Catawampus statue that has upsettingly defined buttocks.
My wallet is so glad that there was not a Catawampus plush. I bought an ornament. But
nice.
All right. So that's it for this episode. Thanks for listening. I'm Shannon.
I'm Amy.
And I'm Anne. Case closed.